Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
You've not seen that.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? And this time is a first for Fan Critical. We will be covering a very different sort of film, but one that I'm sure all of our audience has seen and adores.
Bloody hope so.
Anyway, enough of that. I bloody hope so. Enough of that for now. Today I'm joined by a veritable host of sea creatures. And if they did dwell in the ocean, I like to think that Emma would be a turtle. Hello, Emma.
Aw, that's nice.
Yeah, spot on. Hi, guys. I love turtles.
Yeah. Lucy would be a seahorse. Hello, Lucy.
Okay, that's all right. Hello.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah, and right. Gaz, you would be a little sea urchin clinging onto me and following me around everywhere. Hello, Gaz.
So who was it that moved to Australia first? Interesting.
Ooh. Do you know what's interesting about that sentence, Gareth? Australia. Let's focus on that word right now. Okay. What film are we covering today? This is Gareth's turn, and I have to say that this is the worst one. This is the worst one. Like, we've had a couple
100%.
That have been, you know, I think Pulp Fiction before this was the worst. Me with Reservoir Dogs. And actually, Gladiator was high up there. Like, not seeing Gladiator, that's mental.
Yeah, me with Gladiator was up there and being really embarrassing. But this is the pinnacle.
This is baffling. I'm baffled by this.
This is baffling because you... Doesn't make any sense. You also love these movies. Like, you know, spoiler warning, it's a Pixar film. Gareth, can you tell the audience what you haven't seen?
I hadn't seen Finding Nemo.
Yeah, that's fucked up. How the fuck have you not seen that? But why? I mean, you know, we've got to go through it, obviously.
Seriously, need an explanation. Like.
Yeah. I did some reflection on this. And I've worked out why I missed it. It's nothing overly complicated. It's just that it came out in 2003, right?
Yeah,
so I can't believe that. That's so long ago. I was
15. 15 years old, that is a point where you're probably not at your peak Pixar movie watching stage. You know, this was post my peak. I was a Toy Story kid. This came out when I was probably trying to be a bit too cool, so I had no interest.
And I grew up next door to you, and at that time, I can tell you something, audience, he definitely wasn't cool. He was just in his, we were in his back garden just kicking around a soccer ball, or as we call it, a football. You know, or crashing cars and things. That's the sort of things we did, isn't it, Gareth? Actually, 15. No, we didn't crash
not
cars.
Not real then. Cars, presumably.
No,
Len waited two Toy more cars. Years to crash cars.
Yes,
with
I did.
Me with me in them most of the time.
Hey, it's fine. They're minor crashes, nothing serious. Reversing into things and that sort. Anyway, let's move off of my traumatizing past and on to Finding Nemo. Now, as is tradition, I have pulled the Rotten Tomatoes synopsis and score for this film. Here we go. Breathtakingly lovely and grounded by the stellar efforts of a well-chosen cast, Finding Nemo adds another beautifully crafted gem to Pixar's crown. Any guesses on the score, team?
I know, because I looked it up, so I won't.
Okay, well, don't say then. Next.
I won't.
Emerald Gaz, Have a guess. Go on. Don't take too long.
98% fresh.
Hmm. It's 99% fresh. 99% fresh. Wow.
That's pretty fresh.
Now, I know, Gareth, you were saying that Toy Story, before you'd even seen this film, is better because it means something more to you. And I do agree that the whole Toy Story universe is better in terms of just collectively. But I think this film is also extremely special. Do you want to hazard a guess what Toy Story got on Rotten Tomatoes, out of curiosity, as a percentage?
100%.
Oh, there you
go. Well, yeah.
So
that is
vindicated.
Fair.
Lenny, you in charge of Rotten Tomatoes now.
Yes. As you can see from those stats, these are two very highly thought of films critically. The audience score for both of these films was also in the 90s, so pretty good. I want to talk about everyone's relationship with this film and like when they saw it and their blueberry score for this film. So I'm going to kick it off with Emma. We're going to save Gaz till last. Emma, what's your relationship with the film? And please do blueberry it and explain the blueberry system for any new listeners.
I shall. So unlike Gaz, I don't think I was too cool for this Pixar movie at the age of, I must have been a little bit younger, 13 or 14. I'm pretty sure I went to see it at the cinema. At the Guildford Odeon, I imagine.
Ooh,
when
lovely.
Tickets were like £2.50 and you get the train.
R.
I get £10 for the weekend. I get the train, pick a mix from Woolworths, and then a cinema ticket for me tenner.
Yeah.
I love Finding Nemo. It's beautifully done. It's got a fantastic voice cast. The story is adorable. It's exciting, it's funny.
Adorable. Even
it is adorable. And even as an adult, there's just something so charming about this film, and you notice things that just become funnier and funnier the older that you get every time you watch it. If it's on TV, I will watch this film. I don't think I ever seek it out. Although I did this morning, I rewatched it and I still had a little cry at the end. So yeah, beautiful. It's just beautifully done, isn't it? And it's different and it's clever. And I think that that makes for really wonderful experience as a viewer. So the blueberry system, if you are new to this, hello, welcome. Blueberry system is very simple and it works as thus. There's a scale of 0 to 5. 0 is the worst, 5 is the best, and there can be no halves. This is undoubtedly a 5 blueberry film.
There you go. Good synopsis, solid work. Lucy, shoot bloobs.
So I think I was the same age as... Are we the same age, Gaz?
No, you're older than us.
Okay, so I would have been, what, like 16, I suppose, at the
Unbelievable.
Time. Still not you too think... cool for Pixar. I don't know. I don't know how old people are. I thought I was the same age as you, Len, at least.
Yeah,
I'm 33.
I'm 33.
Then you're correct.
And I was right all along.
It is your birthday, two weeks, though, Luce.
Ignore that fact, because the fact is I was probably 16 when I saw this film.
All in our 30s, so
it's the fact.
So it's fine.
I saw it in the cinema because I love Pixar, and it's one of my favourite Pixar films, I think. I think it's a pinnacle in the animation itself. Like, the seascapes that are created are just fantastic. I also watched it again this morning, and it's just beautiful. I think the story's really moving without being too schmaltzy. And I think, the voice cast is really funny. I really love it. It's definitely up there for me as one of the top, probably, other than Toy Story, my favourite Pixar film, I would say.
Yeah.
I really love it. I love, like, the Australian setting. It's just a bit different. Mm. I know it's under the sea most of the time, but, it's just something a bit different for Pixar. It's just magical. What they create under the sea, the animation is just fantastic. So it's definitely a 5 blueberry film for me.
There you go. Racking up the 5s. I'm just going to echo everyone's thoughts quickly. Like, I watched it, just finished watching it before this podcast. I mean, I've seen it probably, 15, 20 times. I never got to see it in the cinema, which I am devastated about, because I love seeing the Pixar films in the cinema.
How the fuck have you not seen that in the cinema? That's our next series.
Well, because he was too cool, Gaz.
Yeah, well, he was influenced by you, Gaz, and your leather jacket being cool.
I was living smoking next door to him. He was not too cool, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Anyway, there's something quite wholesome about sitting in the cinema, like going to see like a something like a Pixar film, like you said, Emma, getting your little pick and mix. And just, you know, sometimes when you go to the cinema, I like to see a horror movie or a big blockbuster. There's a lot of stress involved, you know? But then when you go to see a Pixar film, you know that you're just going to have a nice time. There are going to be some ups and downs. Of course, it always starts with a down, always.
Mild peril.
But, yeah. But then you know you're going to come out feeling all nice and warm and fuzzy inside. And I'm gutted I never got to actually sit there. But I've seen it so many times. Just watching it again, I'm just amazed at how incredible the animation is in this film. Like,
it really this stands up, doesn't it, after 17 years?
Yeah, it really does.
Not only does it stand up, this is the moment where, like, this film, for me, is the moment where Pixar sort of transformed their animation a bit into, like, actual groundbreaking stuff. Like, Toy Story at the time, obviously groundbreaking, but if you watch Toy Story 1 now, the animation doesn't really hold up that well.
No.
It's very... it's not as textured. It's not as, you know, there's not as dense environments. I promise you, just go back and watch. It's not dense. It's not textured. It's like, it's a bit more procedurally generated than it is thought about. And these seascapes are just incredible. Like, to make something like this, the vastness of ocean have so much texture and depth is incredible. The facial animations, the character animations, the just the variety of animation involved with the different creatures, and everything that you see going on is it's next level. And this is the moment that Pixar sort of transformed themselves. You watch a Pixar film now, they are faultless. Their animation is just perfect. And this was the stepping stone towards that. And just the stories and just so lovely. Like I said, feel very warm and fuzzy after watching it. And I think it's arguably one of the best Pixar stories, if not the best Pixar story. It's quite simple. But, you know, it goes in so many dramatic directions. It's a 5 Blueberry film. It is up there in my top 3 Pixar favourite films with Toy Story and Toy Story 3, because I absolutely adore Toy Story 3. I think it's one of the funniest animations ever made. So, yeah, 5 Blues for me. And now I'll pass over to the man of the moment.
Oh, a lot of pressure, the urchin guys. Himself. We love this film.
I'm dying to hear this.
Yeah.
Beloved film.
He said it. Yeah, beloved, go on, talk, Gareth.
So, as I was saying earlier, I just want to point out, you know, the reason that I missed this. So, I think Monsters, Inc. came out a couple of years before this, and I loved Monsters, Inc., absolutely loved it. But I was, like, 13 years old when Monsters, Inc. came out, and... there are a lot of changes that you go through. I'm not going to go into all of them, but there are a lot of things
you know about
changes
puberty,
that you go through
guys.
From 13 to 15 years old. You are a very different person at the age of 15. And I think that my Pixar watching went into hibernation at about this point. So I missed Finding Nemo. I didn't watch The Incredibles when it came out. I watched that a couple of years later. Cars, totally missed it. Ratatouille, totally missed it. Came
Cars
back,
is shit, though.
Well, yeah. Came back to Pixar with Wall-E. And Wall-E came
great
out
film.
In 2008.
Lovely
when
film.
I was 20.
Lovely film.
And I reckon that is
actually, that's
perfectly...
in my top three. That's in my top three, that one.
You can think about your order and let us know at the end.
I'm bumping Toy Story off, sorry, just so the listeners know. It goes Wall-E, Toy Story 3, and Finding Nemo. Toy Story's out. Next.
Actual Toy Story's out?
I prefer
Toy
Story 3.
You can't do that, Len. No, sorry.
Gaz, carry on with what you were saying. Let's get back to the point.
Sorry.
So I think that little patch of time, 15 to 20 years old, is a perfectly natural thing for somebody to drift away from Pixar for a little bit and to come back to it as a bit of an adult with a greater appreciation for things. So that's why I missed
it. You have no soul. You have no soul. That's the reason.
I will say that I did sort of... I exacerbated this problem by... honestly pretending to have seen it, and like I've put it in lists of my favorite Pixar movies. I've been like, yeah, I'll probably have Finding Nemo in my top 5, because I know that that's the reaction that you get.
That's proper denial as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Scum.
Lying to yourself.
Yeah. It's definitely in my top 3 Pixars.
So So look, I feel a little more whole. I feel a little more whole tonight after having watched it, and I feel like I can legitimately. I mean, you do normally need to have watched a film before you can legitimately rate it. But I feel like I can legitimately say I'm a complete human being. And look, it's very good. That's not a surprise to me. I always knew it would be. It's Pixar in maybe their kind of peak era for a lot of people. Is it as good as Toy Story? Absolutely not. It's just not. I think the setting is an issue. It's got a real challenge. And what the setting does, the sea, the ocean as the setting, it allows for beautiful animation and beautiful artwork. And I think that's totally fair. But it doesn't give you that same relatability as something like Toy Story. Or even Monsters, Inc., which, yes, all right, it's monsters, but, you know, they're regular guys going about their 9-to-5 job.
Well, in a way.
It's just a regular fish dad losing his son.
Like, just to stop your point and you can continue it. But seeing things like this as a kid, which I guess is something you didn't do, like the ocean, is such a thing that's ununderstood by a lot of people, like just in general, like the depth of like wildlife, the biodiversity down there. Like when we watch David Attenborough's like Deep Blue Sea or whatever it's called, not the shark
blue
film,
planet.
Sorry. Blue Planet. You're like stunned and wowed. And like when you first saw this and you saw the creatures and you learn these facts about these different animals that live in the ocean, it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, I would say this as a teacher: do not rely on Finding Nemo as your only documentary about the ocean.
No, not. But I'm saying it's all
like proper fact. Yeah,
needs to be complemented by some kind of David Attenborough or BBC production. And yeah, it's great. And actually, a lot of it, I think. I mean, I'm not a biologist or anything, but I think a lot of it is quite accurate. Like there's some pretty cool stuff that happens in there that actually happens in the sea. But it just doesn't have that same kind of, it doesn't give me the same warm feeling that Toy Story or, as I say, and I know that this is probably really controversial, or even Monsters, Inc. gives me.
Monsters, Inc. is a very good film. And the girl in it is amazingly cute. Like, you know, the relationship with Sully, Sully and the little girl is incredible. So I understand that. But, you know, anyway, it's each their own. Give me a score.
I will give you a score. And
don't you dare.
It's 5 blueberries.
Yeah, correct.
Of course it's 5 blueberries.
God. I thought you were going to give it a 3 or something. I was really scared, guys.
Of course it deserves Christmas. 5 blueberries. It's
Grinch.
Just that.
I thought you were going to be a Grinch.
It's just that it's not as good as...
Yeah, that's
my
fine.
Favorite Pixar movies. But you have to find a pretty bad Pixar movie to not give it 5. And there are a couple. I understand.
Toy Story
that.
4 is really bad. I thought.
Oh
really
no!
Bad.
Disagree.
No,
disagree.
It's lovely.
Not enough buzz. Not enough buzz. So.
In the press or Lightyear?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I need my films with more buzz.
I need more buzz.
Buzz.
Okay, well, that's good. I think 5's across the board. So that's what we call a home run in the industry.
It deserves them. It deserves them, for sure.
It does. Full blue rating here from everyone at Fan Critical. Now, look, I'm going to give you a basic plot. Gaz did one for Akira last week or whatever, and it went on for about 10 minutes. Mine is...
Well, let's be fair.
It's difficult. Akira is harder than this. Akira is a slightly
more complex story than Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Okay. So mine's going to be 3 sentences, essentially. Okay. And then we're going to talk about favorite scenes. Then we're going to move on to some standout performances. And then we're going to move on to the quiz. And the way the quiz works, as everyone knows, is there'll be 6 questions. If Gareth gets 3 correct, he gets a little stamp of approval. We send him a little certificate, and he doesn't have to watch the film again. If he gets less than 3 right, he has to watch the film again. Now, anyway, basic plot. Nemo's mother is killed when he is an egg. He is the last surviving egg of the lot that were eaten.
Yeah, I mean, can tragic, I also just
tragic,
say quickly...
Tragic start.
When he is an egg.
What a brutal movie. Yeah. Like, is there a Pixar movie that has a higher kill count? Like, 400 right from the off. Murdered.
Little babies.
Kidnapped.
Yeah.
Violence. Mental. This is not a film for kids. I'm glad I didn't see it when I was 15. I wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah. Dad then becomes overprotective of Nemo, forcing his son to rebel. And then he gets captured by a fishing vessel. I don't know why I wrote vessel and not boat. That's
fishing
weird.
Vessel.
Fishing vessel. Also, a fishing butt.
Yeah. Yeah. Fishing butt. Very good, Gary.
Don't touch the butt.
You're not trying to impress me now. All right, the quiz will let me determine whether you've actually seen the film. Okay. His dad then sets off across the vast ocean to find his son whilst encountering interesting characters along the way and making friendships that he will never forget. See what I did there with the never forget thing? Because of, you know, yeah, good. Anyway, that's just me then. That's it, Gareth. See, much shorter than your Akira one, much more succinct and to the point.
I was just thinking to myself, Wally has a much higher kill count than...
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Right. The whole planet.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Also yeah. Has a lot less word count than Finding Nemo. No one says anything in that film for like an hour. It's mental. I love it. Such a good, lovely film. Okay, let's start with favorite scenes. Gaz, shoot, because we've all seen it a million times. Let me know what really stood out to you as your favorite scene of the film.
I think for a Pixar movie, this film's like a little bit light on laugh out loud moments. But one where I did laugh out loud are the sharks. Like them.
It's Bruce. And
Bruce is the best.
Bruce
Hello,
is great.
Bruce.
And when Dory says that she doesn't think she's ever eaten a fish. And Chum and the other one are like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And Bruce is just sitting there like in disbelief just for a couple of seconds. He's like, wow. Yeah. He's so good. I'm a big fan of the sharks.
Eric Banner actually voices one.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry.
That's a fact.
Eric Banner voices the hammerhead shark.
Oh, there you go.
He does, Lisa.
I'm really sorry about this, mate. He's never usually like this. That's terrible.
Yeah, sorry about father. Bruce.
He never even knew his father.
Oh, shark. I hate sharks, but they're good.
I love that scene. It's like Fish Eaters Anonymous. And like Bruce is just brilliant. He's such a good shark. He's such a good character.
Such and a good shark.
Like, now let's see the mantra. Fish are friends, not food.
Not food.
Yeah.
I love that. It's so good.
What's also great about it is they are terrifying. Like when their teeth and the animation and the animation of the sharks and the teeth is very, I don't know, like it like provokes a lot of fears in my mind from when I used to like watch Jaws and stuff. You know what I mean?
Same.
Like it's,
I'm terrified of sharks. This,
same.
Yeah, me too. Me
and
too.
When his eyes go black, when he sniffs the blood. Ah, there's actually a Finding Nemo ride in Disneyland and the shark, big Bruce's head comes out at you and you ride in a turtle shell. Woo! No one can see what I'm doing. Well, you lot can. But yeah, it's really good. But the shark bit's really scary when his head just comes out. Just imagine that I'm swirling around people.
Oh, certainly.
That is a good scene. Yeah, the sharks are good. And yeah, it's just the fact that they're Australian. I don't know why. It just adds something completely different.
There's something about the fact that there's so many Aussies in this that just makes it fucking hilarious. And I don't know why.
I love it, yeah.
I think because it's unusual.
Before I moved here, I hadn't really thought much about it, like the fact that it's obviously set from like the coral reef, Queensland, down to Sydney. And I'd never really thought about it too much, even though it's obvious. But then I was just picking up on the accent constantly in the film this time round with every single character. And it is great. I love the fact that it's localized to that area of the world and just sort of like you said, gives it a different sort of feel to other Pixar films.
Well, I think also like Len, what you were saying about the fact that, you know, this is quite a turning point for Pixar in terms of like the setting, actually also in terms of the characters, because we're not in America or Britain, we're in Australia, like we're in a really different part of the world, and I think that makes it a really unique film as well.
On the characters as well, I think one of the things that I love about the film is that there's no bad guy. Like, nobody is inherently an evil character.
Darla.
No fish.
The barracuda that killed them all at the start is a pretty bad guy.
Barracuda.
I know he's only trying to live his life, but he didn't need to kill them all.
Yeah, I suppose he's playing. Nobody in the main, through the main beats of the movie is inherently evil. They're just like the sharks. They're lovely guys, but you know, Bruce can't help himself when he smells blood. Everybody's just trying to live their life. You know, nobody's out for
just trying to swim in peace.
Just keep swimming.
Lucy or Emma, feel free to jump in. Favorite scenes.
I've got one. My favourite scene, and I've forgotten about this scene, but I love this, and this is kind of a bit of not Deep Blue Sea, but Blue Planet. So when they lose the goggles.
Both great in their own way.
And they swim down into the deep, dark depths of the ocean. Melvin. Wait, what's his dad's name?
Melbourne?
Marlon. Have you seen this movie?
Jesus.
Emma, or are you going to have to take the quiz?
Melvin.
Yeah, I might have to take... Jesus Christ. I've got a terrible memory.
Melvin.
Melvin the clownfish.
Yeah, obviously, Melvin the clownfish. And when they swim right down, they're like, oh, beautiful light. And then there's like that deep sea fish. Because one of the most terrifying things about the ocean is the shit that we don't know about, or the shit that we're discovering, which is these monstrous luminescent things underneath there. And do you know what the magical thing about that scene is? That it's really scary and it's funny. And then it's when Dory realises that she can remember something. And it just, I cry at that scene every time. I just think it's a real turning point in the movie. And in Dory's story, also, how scary is that luminescent weird
thing? If anybody wants to see more of those luminescent angler, deep sea anglerfish, watch the High Seas episode of Our Planet, which is
David
Attenborough series on Netflix. They are insane. They are fucking weird.
It's almost like that part of the ocean is basically like prehistoric, and it's just scary. But they managed to make it really quite magical, as well as, you know, tense with some minor peril.
Yeah, minor peril. Mild peril.
Yep. Lucy, you want to chime in with a scene?
I will chime.
Before we go on to standout performances.
With the turtles.
Oh, yeah. Cowabunga,
when
dude.
They're riding the East Australian Current and the little baby ones. And he, you know, Crush gives him some advice, fatherly advice. And I just love the little ones. They're so cute. And when they're telling him, giving him instructions on how to get out, and he's like, you're so cute, but I don't know what you're saying. Because they're just so like high-pitched little cute voices. And he's like, bye, Crush, dude. And he just doesn't know how to speak to him. I just love it. I think it's well cute. And he's really scared that Dory's like injured and she's just playing hide and seek with the little turtles. I just think it's such a nice, it's visually good, and like the character work, like the voice work of the turtles is really good. And then there's like actually the meaning of the story and him sort of saying, you know, you've got to let them fly. And he's got all these kids that he lets go.
Yeah, it's turtles. And, they let their young fend for themselves. And they find their way back. It's just,
and
that's
he gets
just
to find
nature.
Out how old he is as well, which he promised he'd do for Nemo. So yeah, it's a lovely scene. I love it.
And that's typical Pixar as well, like tugging at your heartstrings, isn't it? You know? And there's a really nice message in there. We've all learned something from this film.
Yeah, always learning with Pixar films. I think we've covered a lot of the scenes there. I mean, the whole film is glorious. Obviously, the end scene is very emotional. I think the start of the film, like Gaz said, the massacre at the beginning, is like, it's such a typical Disney film move. That they're never going to go away from, because it's just so powerful at the start of a film to do something like that. You know, like I just
Bambi's
think
mom.
I think I well it's up you know it's Bambi it's like you know it, just think about all the Disney films and think about the tragedy that always occurs at the start of them.
Dumbo,
closest you know, it's
Lion
horrible.
King
Lion King famously,
within the first 20 minutes. You know, it's very impactful, and just the desolation in the reef after that, you know, after the barracuda is tough to see. It's a very sweet opening as well when he nurtures Nemo the egg, and you see that the egg's a bit damaged, and obviously his fin's damaged. It's very sweet, I love that scene, even though it's horrible. But it's a lovely, it's a great way to start the film.
Stand up. The word massacre would come up in a podcast about a Pixar film.
Well, it has, but actually, several times.
Here we are.
Here we are.
2020.
Fish Egg Massacre.
I mean, this is 2003, but whatever. Standout performances. I've written on my notes here. There's only two real characters for me that are standouts in terms of voice work. And obviously we'll talk about the most controversial one, even though it's not controversial at the time. Dory, voiced by Ellen DeGeneres. Clearly the standout character of the film. All agree?
Yeah,
100%. She's my
favourite.
She's
very, very funny. Very good.
And I think she's hilarious. Ellen does a great job of it. And I know, you know, there's some controversy about her now, but we're in 2003 in this podcast and it's spot
Correct.
On, mate.
Yeah, it's great.
Great voice work. Yeah. She is the centrepiece of the film. Clearly did so well as the centrepiece of the, like, the sort of thing that holds the story together in a way. Like, because otherwise, you said, it's just a son and a father sort of story. But, you know, Marlon needs to find, or Melvin, whatever you want to call him, needs to find something else. He needs to find something else. Yeah, finding Melvin, that's the third film. Other than just this love for his son, like he grows to love Dory and they have a very special relationship, which obviously gets explored in a sequel and stuff like that. So, which Gareth, you do need to go see now. You can go see that one.
Yeah. So you've got to watch Finding Dory, man.
Not as good, yeah. But
it's good.
Good.
It's not as good, but it is good. It's still very good. It's a Pixar film. So, So
same thing.
Basically,
is it same thing?
No, it's Finding Dory. Obviously, it's not the same
Dory,
thing
mate.
As Finding Nemo.
Yeah, but what about it's
tank.
Willem Dafoe? Do you guys? It's Willem Dafoe, isn't it? As Gil in the tank?
Yeah,
is that who it was?
When you first see it, it takes a while to work it out. But what a great character as well! Like, how cool?
Yeah, I love Gil.
Yeah, he is.
Because you think he might be a bit evil, but he's not evil.
See, but that's
help.
It. That's Finding Nemo not having the evil character in the place that an evil character often would be.
Yeah, in this fish tank where they've gone mad or something, you know. I love all the characters in the fish tank as well, like Bubbles guy, Jacques, you know, who likes to clean everything. He cracks me up, you know.
I like the starfish.
They're all so interesting. Yes. Starfish, and then you've also got Flo, who always or whatever sees her sister Flo in the reflection of the tank. They're just great characters. It's just a great host of characters in there. So, you know, other than that, I think it's time we move on to what is becoming a tradition, obviously, in Fan Critical, which is the how the fuck have you not seen that quiz? Okay, so the way it works is 6 questions. I'm going to put in some lovely music. We're going to have a great time. Gareth, no pressure, but if you don't get, you know, if you don't get minimum 50% right, so 3 out of 6 right, then you have to watch the film again, which, to be honest, I would love to do. So, Gaz, maybe lose on Porpoise. Ooh.
Wow. In the film.
Wow. Yeah, so see what I did there, Gareth. See what I did there.
Easy. That one's lazy.
If John was here, you know, or if you've listened to our Akira podcast, we did fish puns for about 15 minutes. So if that is your jam, go listen to that. It's hilarious.
All right, enough clown fishing around. Let's get on with it.
Oh, God. Jesus, that's the worst one. So Gareth, are you ready for this? There's going to be, everyone else could answer if Gareth gets it incorrect, okay? You guys are playing for nothing other than pride. Gareth, this will be easy, mate. It's a Pixar film. It was very difficult for me to come up with difficult questions. You know, last week, John did well in Akira. That is probably one of the hardest ones to get right.
Yeah, we gave him the easy questions though, didn't we?
We did. All right, the music's jingling now. All right, Gareth, question one. What is the name of Nemo's late mom, or mum, as we say here?
Oh, yeah. I know that one straight away. Her name.
I'd like to say right now, 1 second, Gareth, that you've turned your camera off, which I find very suspicious.
I'll turn it back on, but let me tell you this. The fan on my laptop is going mental. I thought I'd try and save you a job.
Okay. I just want to see you not cheating, but you know.
No, but I can tell you because I thought it was strange because the way that an American accent says this name makes it sound like her name's Carl.
Carl.
I do like watching movies with subtitles, so I did see that her name wasn't Carl, it was Coral.
Yeah, anyone who listened to our Walking Dead podcast of old will know that we love the name Carl from The Walking Dead. Literally,
I did not
said
listen,
it constantly.
So.
No, well, not a real
no idea
fan.
What you're talking about.
That was just for me, and okay. To be honest.
That's one correct, Gareth. Question number two: at the fish are friends, not food meeting, how long has it been since Bruce says he last ate a fish? How long has it been? Since Bruce said he last ate a fish. That's question two.
That's a good question. I know it's a number of... It was weeks, I'm almost certain. And I'm just trying to decide whether it was two or three. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with 2 weeks.
That is incorrect. I'm passing it over to the lovely ladies, the turtle and the seahorse.
Three weeks.
It is correct. It's 3 weeks. So that is... It's all right, Gareth. You're still on track. You're on 50%. Question number three: What song does Darla sing to the fish tank when she arrives at the dentist's office? What song does Darla sing to the fish tank when she arrives at the dentist's office?
And for a bonus point, sing it.
Yeah, sing it for the point itself.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's no bonus points.
What song does she sing at the fish tank?
Ooh, maybe it's not as easy as I thought.
I remember her banging the fish tank. I don't remember her singing.
We will rock you. No, I'm joking. That isn't it.
Is it something?
If you don't know, Gareth, you can pass. You've got more chances. There's a couple of easier ones in here. This is. I reckon this is the second hardest question.
What did she sing? Is it a fish-related song?
I'm not telling you anything about that, Gareth. There's no hint. There's never been a hint in this quiz's history, and I'm not going to start breaking the rules for you right now.
I think she sings... Can't fish, the Backstreet Boys. Backstreet's back.
No, unfortunately not.
Again, why?
What do you think, girls, ladies, turtle, seahorse?
I mean, is it? It's here.
I don't
isn't
know.
It just here, fishy, fishy, fishy. Here,
no, fishy, it's fishy, fishy. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Oh.
Because who's why? The star?
Oh, starfish. Yeah. Darla's a prick.
Yeah. So there you
why
go.
Why are you sleeping? I say that a lot.
It doesn't count if
no one gets
two don't get it.
Yeah, fair. No. Okay, so Gareth, you're in a bit
hard
of a dangerous
question.
Position here. You're in a difficult position, and I would say it gets easier, and it will get easier. How old was the sea turtle Marlin met? How old was the sea turtle that Marlin met?
It's Melvin.
100.
Oh, sorry.
And 50 years old, which is
correct.
A surprise, because Sandy Plankton said they only lived to 100.
Well, there you go. Sandy Plankton's
bonus.
A dickhead.
You don't get a bonus point. You just get a merit
bonus
for remembering. Point.
Right, Gareth, you've got two correct.
Gold star, Gareth.
Two correct, two left. You need to get one right, otherwise you have to watch the film again.
Wild peril.
Marlin, or Melvin, tries to tell a joke throughout the film, never getting to the punchline. What is the punchline of Melvin / Marlin's joke?
With fronds like these, who needs anemones?
Correct. That is good, because I thought you wouldn't get that.
Yeah.
Very well done. You have passed. Nice work. But we'll, this is like any sort of quiz show. We have to do the formalities.
Still finish it up. Yeah.
What is the exact address that Melvin / Marlin and Dory are trying to get to? What is the exact address and name, please?
Well, see, I thought that you would ask me this, so
yeah,
I tried to remember it, and it's 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney.
Mm. What country?
And
is
the
that,
name?
Mate?
Pardon?
I need the full address, mate. But I need the name as well.
What, New South Wales?
No, that's not on the address.
Australia,
Gareth. Jeez, you're a geography teacher.
Oh, New South Wales is on the address, so.
No, it isn't.
Have another look. Have another look. And okay. The name is P. Sherman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Sherman. I can see.
Well yeah. done, Gaz.
Well done, Gaz. I mean, I should disqualify you that last question. So technically, you only got three, but I'll give you four. You got four correct, which is one of the lowest.
You should disqualify me because I got it right. Or
no, I'm just kidding. So you've passed. You didn't lose on Porpoise. Did it again. So well done. Well done, Gareth. You have seen it.
What was my turtle score? Sorry.
Your turtle score, 150.
No, he's missed it. This guy, he'll get it later.
Oh, got it now. Good one.
Kick yeah, himself.
Good that. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Okay. So, that is the end of the quiz. Gareth has seen the film. Congratulations. Now, obviously, it's approaching Christmas time. This will be our last. How the fuck have you not seen that of the year? When we come back in the new year, there'll be new podcasts that we're going to be talking about. There's going to be new shows that we're going to be covering. All of that is to be announced. However, this series will continue until we run out of classics, as it's fair to say, to cover. Right, girls, give me one.
I haven't seen Braveheart, but I don't feel like I should have.
What?
What?
What? What is happening?
Lucy!
Braveheart, what do you mean?
That is disgusting. You've never seen Braveheart.
No.
All right, audience, that is what's happening.
I don't want to watch Braveheart. Don't make me do it.
You have to.
We didn't know this before the podcast. This is genuinely live reaction. Lucy has not seen the Mel Gibson and very, very historically accurate film Braveheart. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds shit.
My favourite bit is when they sing the Scottish national anthem. Yeah.
Oh, it just sounds.
William.
Is it even
Wallace.
Good though?
What do you mean?
It's amazing, Lucy.
It's hilarious.
How have you not seen Braveheart?
Don't say it's hilarious. That doesn't make me want to watch it.
It's hilarious.
And good in a way.
I just said it's amazing, not hilarious.
No, it was hilarious.
And
good.
I'm really looking forward to just doing that podcast in a Scottish accent the whole way through. Well, John will love doing that, so get involved. So, next one in the new year is Braveheart. Everyone, which is mental. That is up there as one of the worst.
That's like how?
That's the Gladiator of the old times. That's like before Gladiator. It was like Braveheart. No, I agree. Gladiator
of the 90s.
Gladiator is better, but
it's Gladiator with a Scottish accent.
Exactly.
That sounds
correct, Gareth. And less lovely settings. Instead, you're just roaming muddy marshes.
I'm going to Google what it's got on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Whatever.
78%. You lot.
What I would say is I'm very much looking forward to doing this.
That'll be a fun film to talk about.
Yeah.
Braveheart in the new year. I think that's it for Fan Critical for the year, because we've had a bit of a mental year with COVID and everything. I feel like we've tried to deliver some varied new content for everybody. We've tried our best, because look, if the cinemas aren't putting out films and the TV stations aren't putting out new shows because of production problems and stuff like that, it's very difficult for us to, you know, do stuff. But we have done stuff. We've released, like, I don't know how many podcasts, like 70, 80 podcasts this year.
Something
stupid.
In COVID.
And yeah, 100%.
Done shit tons.
100%. So we want to thank everyone for sticking with us.
100% of the podcasts that we've done during COVID.
True. I want to thank everyone for sticking with us during this pandemic. Hopefully we've given you some light relief during this awful year for a lot of people. And next year is going to be our biggest and best year yet, when all the films start coming out, when new shows that we're going to cover start coming out, when we come up with new series to do. So please do keep with us, stick with us. If you want to support us further, you can go to patreon.com/fancritical. I know on there there's some bonus materials. We do a commission podcast, that's an option. There's like probably 20 or so cast episodes on there now, which are short episodes where we've just had a laugh and recast films with different actors and put different rules on it. It's good fun. Go check it out. And just any support would be muchly appreciated. Just your subscriptions, to be honest with you, is amazing. So thank you, everyone. We hope you have a lovely Christmas, a very happy new year. And from everyone here at Fan Critical, I'm sure everyone here echoes my thoughts. Enjoy your time off. Rest up. It's a bad time at the moment for everybody, but just try and enjoy it as best you can.
Stop banging on about that. Have a wonderful wonderful time, everybody.
Yeah,
stay safe. Merry festive break, everybody. And here's to 2021.
Stay safe.
Here's to 2021. Freedom!
We're going from, I just thought, we're going from Wales to Scotland.
Oh, that is very good, Gareth. That's I like that. Let the listeners think about that one.
Let's chew on that one.
Bye, guys. Happy Christmas. Right. See you later. Bye. Just keep swimming, guys. Just keep swimming.
Keep swimming.
Beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing. Somewhere beyond the sea, she's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'll go sailing. It's far beyond the stars, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt my heart there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore. We'll kiss just like before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea. And never again I'll go sailing. Just as before, happy we will be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. No more sailing, so long sailing, sailing, no more sailing. Goodbye, farewell, my friend, no more sailing. So long, sailing, no more sailing.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.